when you're encountering somebody and they're just saying like, I'm stuck all the time. I'm stuck all the time. We even use these words sometimes without realizing that we're sending a text message to the field around us saying, make me stuck. I'm obsessed with being stuck. I just love it. How do you know we love it? Because we talk about it all the time. And so this field around us is just saying, look, Mike loves being stuck because he won't stop talking about being stuck. So we're going to just make sure he gets more of this feeling because he loves it.
What if you could build a business in the modern world as big or as small as you want without having to compromise the things that were the most important to you in the very beginning? This is the Wealthy Consultant Talks podcast with Taylor Welch and Mike Walker, as they share with you today their learning lessons from stories and their experiences over the past 10 to 15 years and share with you right here, right now. Let's get into it.
This is the first thing, and we've got some homework we're going to do at the end. People mistakenly assume that what is fated to be will be. Que sera, sera. It's a dumb statement. Don't ever say this. You've heard people say this. It's not true. Fate is an illusion. There's no such thing as like this is, you know, fated to happen. If you believe that fate is inevitable, you will constantly be struggling and missing your fate, or you will be accepting things that are beneath your destiny because you're not willing to persevere for them. So the idea that fate's just going to happen because it's fated, people don't understand like how the world puts itself together. So this is a more of a river. Your fate is your destiny. Your destiny is very contingent. It's contingent on your choices. It's contingent on your attitude. It's contingent on what you look at and what you choose not to look at. And it's a contingent on how you steward this thing in your brain, which is the way that your body is stewarded. So it's really a process of selection. So we get to actively decide who we are going to be each day. And if we do not, no decision is a decision. That means we made the decision for somebody else to choose who we're going to be for us. So we're going to cover in this first part two main levers in the first part of the challenge, which is variation and selection. These are biological concepts. We're taking these concepts from biology. We're moving them into like non-tangible science. Variation refers to the differences in traits, physical or behavioral, among individuals and outcomes. You can see my source for this is Richard Dawkins. Is that because I believe that Richard Dawkins is the man? No, that's not. But it's because he has studied variation biologically, because he's studying evolution. He thinks that one day we just woke up and like turned from a blade of grass into a human. So he's one of those guys that's become so smart, he's become super dumb. So like that's, you can get so smart that you lose the ability to have relevance of information. You don't understand how to assign things. But when it comes to studying biology, he's studied a lot of biology. So variation will be the difference. Like Mike has, Mike has white skin. Leo has black skin. And Taylor's an Indian. All right. Taylor's neither. This is variation. I do have Cherokee Indian. In fact, one of my favorite traits about myself is that I'm not technically white. So I will announce it from the rooftops. I don't know, Mike, are you white? Is your lineage white?
Yes, there is a little Indian actually as well, but through a very obscure line. So I don't scream it from the rooftops, but I appreciate that you do.
Thank you. I was on the phone with one of my mentors. Her name is Issy. And she's a black woman from Nigeria. And she was asking me how an event went a couple of weeks ago. And I said, it wasn't very good. She said, why? And I said, because I walked in and all the speakers are white males. There's no women anywhere. There's like no black people anywhere. And she said, Taylor, you realize that you're white, right? And I said, don't you ever disrespect me like that. Like, yippee, wow. My Indian and African heritage. But anyways, this is variation. So there's different traits inside of the human species. Then it comes hair length and different stuff. This also exists in the spirit. You have different personality traits. You have different capacities for different things. So why not everyone has the same gift? You always have to work for a gift. You always have to work to steward it, to sharpen it. but some of us are predisposed to different gifts because of variation. Selection uses variation to make progress. So if we look at, I have one version of my life where I could be living in Nashville with a family and running businesses, and I have a different version, variation of my life where I could be living in Los Angeles making music as a single guy. I have variation in that, so I can then choose between the two. Without variation, there is no selection. So our lives work the exact same way in the non-tangible arena of our future. So we can say, look, in 2030, there's a variation of my life that is over here and a different version with a different variation of my life over here. And I can select between the two. Which one do I feel more affinity with? Which one do I feel better? When somebody says something like, should you move here or should you move there? And they're like, I just think I should move here. Why? I just feel better about it. What they're trying to say is that through the intuitive circuitry of how the mind and body integrate, they have selected a variance that they like better than the previous variant. We're going super deep on something that's typically people don't go this deep on it, but this is how everything works. Are you guys still with me? Are we good so far?
I'm with you, man.
Okay, good. Okay, you guys are having fun. So there's a scientist, Mark Bickert, argues that variation and selection, typically biological concepts, also apply to foundational physics, specifically quantum field theory, so QFT. If these principles work in non-biological domains, as the theory suggests, they are likely fundamental to how energy and reality operates. Most of Newton's laws are energy conservation laws, momentum, energy, charge. These can be thought of as constraints. They exist to protect what is happening and filter out anything that would disrupt or use it prematurely. The universe is ordered by these rules, and humans are discovering the rules that it is governed by. But all things drift to entropy or chaos, and the more we understand these rules, the better we can understand why it drifts to chaos. Chaos is the heart of man. It's inside of our hearts. The reason why we tend to drift to chaos is because we are actively enforcing a governance protocol using the rules that we have discovered, and we inevitably produce on the outside whatever is present on the inside. Let's pause and let's break this down. Can we?
Yeah, it's a good one, man. Let's go on that.
So no matter what version of history you believe in, there's connective tissue that connects all different societies and people together. For example, the human species had to have come from one person originally, because even if you go into a Big Bang theory, spontaneous combustion of human life doesn't exist. It comes from one. We can trace our genetic protocol back to a woman thought to be the husband or the wife of Adam. We can't quite get to the dude because the genetic epigenetics don't work the same way, but we've taken this all the way back to one woman. There's one person that we can trace this back to. So if we start at the very, very beginning of the story, we have this economic picture of life on Earth, and we have a man and a woman, and they're living in paradise, and they're creating things out of nothing. They are, if you want to go Bible on this, you realize that the Earth was not given to Adam in a productive state. The Bible says, in fact, that the seeds of the ground wasn't productive because there was no one to attend to the soil. So Adam was given this thing that had no productive capacity, and one of his jobs was to create production capacity for this thing using the economic system that was installed at the very beginning. When we violated that, we stepped out of that, and we created, for the first time in human history, we don't know how long this season of life happened. It could have been hundreds of years. Bible doesn't tell us, and we don't have history books from 7,000 years ago. We don't have it. We don't know. But it could have been 100 years. It could have been 500 years. It could have been 10 years. We don't know. But what we do know is it was long enough for the production capacity to get pretty high. So it was more than 6 months. It was more than a year. So you have one dude who's managing the gross domestic production output of the entire planet, and it's working. He's starting to name things, put them to work, give them jobs, and things are growing. And then a decision is made that introduces for the first time since history began this concept called scarcity. What is scarcity? Scarcity is the idea that if you add everything that everyone wants up on one column, and then you add everything that exists on another column, there will always be more of what people want than what exists. That's scarcity in a nutshell. So if you take this call, you apply it pro rata to all the people of the earth, and you say, hey, Lael, what's everything that you could possibly want? What do you want? Put it on a spreadsheet. And you do that, Mike, me, everyone else on this call, everyone else in the world. We don't have enough stuff. We don't have enough stuff to give everybody what they want. This didn't exist before. It existed after the economic system that was installed in the earth was violated. And for thousands of years, humans have tried to fix this with systems to impose order onto the resulting chaos. So if you've ever felt like you're living paycheck to paycheck to paycheck to paycheck, you just can't really get ahead, technically you can thank Adam for that, because that didn't exist before. The scarcity was a result of bad management, bad choices. You dive into management theory, you look at alternative use, the alternative use that creeped up, the economic systems of the earth that cropped up. Everything has been created in an attempt to fix the original error in how we managed our time, our decisions, and our choices. Chaos at this point has had so many years to work itself into the epigenetics of our bodies, into the hearts of the human species, that the rules that you realize when God told the people to be fruitful and multiply, he told that to creation, not just to Adam. The earth was commanded to be fruitful and multiply. It was the earth as well. And so we have a responsibility as humans, and whether you believe in the Bible or you don't believe in the Bible, it doesn't matter. You know what everyone has in common. They all want to move forward. So it really doesn't matter. You have a responsibility to learn these rules so that you can enforce some level of order onto the chaos that is around you. And so this is why chaos is in the heart of man. This is why chaos is in the heart of woman. This is why the chaos, when a person is born, that person doesn't have to get super old before you realize their predisposition to chaos. Who taught them that? Like my 2-year-old will walk around the house, find things to break, then leave the pieces scattered around. We can find him through the pieces that he broke off of his sister's toy. We can find him through the food he pulled out of a thing and just dropped on the ground for the dogs. We can find who taught him how to do this. This is ingrained in the human species, and it tracks all the way back to the very beginning. So to combat this, we have to get really good at understanding, where do I fit into the rule system? And how do I use these rules, because they're all counterintuitive, not just to self-serve, but how do I use these rules to restore order, not just for myself, but for everyone else around me? So let's go through some of these real fast. We're going to pull these from the quantum field theory, and we can just grab a list of observations. First, life is not particle-based. It's field-based. It's not fixed. The difference between a particle and a field is a particle doesn't move. A field is moving all the time. So reality is a dynamic field, or it's this composite of dynamic fields that are all on top of each other. So it's never static. So your life is not rigid. You're never stuck in one place. It's the way we think about ourselves and the field around us that actually enforces a sort of instruction codex to that field. So when you have somebody, when you're encountering somebody and they're just saying like, I'm stuck all the time. I'm stuck all the time. I'm stuck. Do you have these friends who are just like, I'm just stuck? We even use these words sometimes without realizing that we're sending a text message to the field around us saying, hey, I'm stuck. Make me stuck. I'm obsessed with being stuck. Mm-hmm. I love it. How do you know we love it? Because we talk about it all the time.
Yep.
All we talk about is how we're stuck. We talk about it to our friends, to ourselves, to our mom, to our kids, stuck. And so this field around us, which doesn't have the level of sentience that it would need to deduce intention, is just saying, hey, look, Mike, loves being stuck because he won't stop talking about being stuck. So we're going to just make sure he gets more of this feeling because he loves it. This is the damage. This is the damage. All right, second, uncertainty is the source of all opportunity. There exists no opportunity inside of certainty. If you know exactly what's going to happen, you will lose the upside of unlimited opportunity. If you know it for sure, it is a limiter, not a propellant. So our job is to calculate the risk of uncertainty and then start before we're ready. Uncertainty is not a threat. It's legitimate. It's just potential energy. That's what uncertainty is. We're not going to do homework with this right now. We're just going through some base cases. Third, constraints are used to shape success. Achieving something great is less about making it happen, and it is more about filtering out anything that could stop it from happening. You will have a much better life if you create rules that limit or filter bad behavior than if you try to force yourself to do the right thing all of the time. So this is like empirically documented from many different sources. Many different religious sources, non-religious sources, what we have an obligation to do. If we really want to create momentum, we should create systems that self-select and eliminate bad behavior rather than trying to create systems to force good behavior. This sounds really cool, but it's frustrating because it means there are people in your life right now you're not allowed to talk to anymore. It means that there are places in your crew that you're not allowed to go to anymore. It means that there are thoughts that you've got really comfortable thinking that you're not allowed to think about anymore. Because if you really want to know the secret to how to make progress, you're going to move faster if you can eliminate the negative than just trying to overdo it with the good. In fact, in belief architecture, one of the things that we talk about in belief architecture is the disproportionate effect negativity has on you compared to positivity. This idea of positive psychology, just think good thoughts, just be happy, just look at the bright side, just give me seven things you're grateful for, blah, 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 blah. You know, like, I don't know if your parents ever did that. Give me three things you're grateful for about this situation where you got grounded. Really hard to do.
Yeah.
But it's not effective because if you take 10 negative thoughts and 10 positive thoughts, you are so far underwater, you're not coming back up. There's a 10x multiple on the power of negativity compared to the power of positivity.
Oof.
And these are like triple blind surveys, big sample sizes. When you think something negative, it hurts you more than it helps you to think something positive. So our job is to filter out more than it is to just try to overwhelm the nervous system with positivity. Fourth, when a decision is made, it not only filters out the other decisions, but it collapses them. All right, this is cool. Let's get into this. There's the superpositioning of everything in your life and your future that could possibly happen. Now we have rules that have been created or heuristics. What's the thing that said anything that could go wrong will go wrong?
Heard it.
What's that called? Murphy's Law.
Murphy's Law.
Yeah,
Murphy's Law. Murphy's Law. Murphy's Law is true. But it's true because all of the things that could go wrong exist as possibilities being superpositioned above your projection forward. It's true because you haven't collapsed it yet. You haven't made the decision to eliminate it yet. And so sometimes all we need to do to eliminate something like a Murphy's Law or things will take as long as it takes, blah, blah, blah. There's all these things that basically they just did experiments and proved one side of it. There's a flip side to the coin. Everything that could work out to my advantage will work out to my advantage. You make the decision there, and then it collapses everything else that doesn't fit into that small little portal. It collapses it. What people think they want is that, you know, all they're going to make is great decisions. But what they really need is that the alternatives are eliminated to prevent the accrual of too many outcomes all the time, playing with your future. Even a bad decision at times can be much more beneficial than endless indecision, where you're trying to carry with you on your psyche the weight of 1,000 possible outcomes at the same time. Yeah. That's called drag. You eventually lose your ability to function. Fifth, speed and precision do not go together. You have to pick one and learn how to use energy in a way that makes you feel better about yourself. Some of us lean towards precision, Mike Walker would be one of these people.
Guilty.
It's not that he can't go fast. It's just that he doesn't want – he's a precision guy. Some of us lean towards speed. I would be an example. This is great to have people in your life that lean the opposite way as you as well. There's wisdom in a multitude of counsel. The reason is because there's a lot of diversity in a multitude of counsel. So there are other people that see differently than you do. They're tuned differently. But understanding yourself and narrowing down to whatever makes you feel the most optimistic. So for me, there's nothing that makes me feel more optimistic like running is 1,000 miles an hour towards the edge of a cliff. That's where I feel the best. There's so much opportunity. I love it. That's my personality. Yo. Like, I just like it. And then there are certain people, it's like there's nothing that makes them feel more pessimistic than running 1,000 miles an hour when they haven't thought it through. So they're more precision leaners. So understanding you is going to go a long way. But you very, very, very rarely, in fact, never have speed and precision at the same time unless you have two people going together. So this is even interesting for your social circles and for your community and yeah. the person that you marry and like all of this stuff is it has implications that we can think through. Are you guys still good or are we bored? Let me speed up.
No, keep going, dude.
On track.
Sixth and final, and then we're going to get into systems and homework. Sixth, there's no law that exists forever outside of the spiritual. We can go into the spiritual. We can find some laws that never change. But in the physical representation of the spirit, there's no laws that don't evolve. And what works now will not always work. So you should have the expectation that you're going to have to reinvent yourself periodically. And this can be done through audits. It can be done through weekly reviews, touch points with important people in your life. It's every 90 days for me. I'll sit down and I'll look at my map and how I'm using my time. And I'll ask myself, is this still working? And if it's not still working, I will change it. I don't think this isn't working anymore. I must have gotten it wrong 90 days ago. No, that's not how life works, bro. That doesn't exist. What works now might not work in November. In fact, if everything in your life that's working now works in November, you might not be growing. You might be stuck.
Yep.
No human advances through life without their laws evolving for them. And so it's just the understanding of this alone should help a lot because you can realize, look, it's not just obstacles that are hurting me. It's not just things are not working. There might be something that I have allowed myself to cement into law that needs to be adjusted or adapted to fit into a new season. And then you can iterate your personal rules or your laws from there. All right, two systems of the brain. I'm going to take you into both of these for your homework. System one, this is Daniel's research. System one, you've probably already read this. There's a fast, automatic, and intuitive type of system. System two is slow, deliberate, and analytical. People have made the mistake of saying system one is bad and system two is good. That's not how it works. If you're in a situation where a quick instinct decision needs to be made based off of your intuition, you should be thankful for the system one, the first system, because that's the brain's default under pressure. So when we're under pressure, we're going to default to system one. Regardless of how you're tuned. If you're tuned for speed or precision, you still go into system one. However, when it comes to issues of the future, system two is always preferred. If you're addicted to a reactionary lifestyle, then you will never have room for system two to be engaged. So here's the first piece of homework that we're going to have you do. I want you to design three different versions of your day. Pick a random day, and this is actually something you're going to do every day. Version A is the timeline where everything flows effortlessly. Can you picture your life? Can you picture today, Monday, where everything that you're supposed to do flows effortlessly and it's not even difficult and it's easy and you end the day saying, wow, I accomplished everything I was supposed to and it barely cost me anything. Does this make sense?
Yep.
Version B is the timeline where obstacles arise. And how do you handle those? And then version three or C is the timeline where unexpected opportunities arise. And so getting this where you design it, this is what it looks like. So this is my Monday, literally perfect. Right? Nothing even tried to get in my way today. Version B, oh, there are some obstacles that hit me on this Monday, but I kept going. And version C, there were so many unexpected opportunities that showed up today that I wasn't even looking for. The key is not to choose version A. The key is to acknowledge that all three of these versions exist at the same time. And then you can move through your day knowing if you need to step into B, you just step into B. You've already designed it. So you can step into it. My day is going good. It's a random Tuesday. I'm in version A, baby. Like, let's go. Everything's easy. Then 1 o'clock, I get an email. Oh, here's an obstacle. That's okay. I've already thought through what version B looks like. Just step into version B. Handle it. You see how this would work? For you to prepare these?
Definitely.
These are all operating at the same time. There's nothing you can do to eliminate any of them. But through the deliberate selection, there's that word again, of these three versions, we have filtered out all of the unhealthy versions that will try to put you into worry, anxiety, or reactionary mode. So there, everything that could happen is in version A, B, and C. A is perfect. B, there's some obstacles, but I'm good. C is there's a bunch of unexpected opportunities. There is no version D where you just get, you know, cut off in traffic and then you just drive your car off a cliff. That's not a version that we've designed. There's no version D where somebody quits from your staff and therefore you blow up your business and go bankrupt. We're not going to design those things. We have filtered them out. There's just A, B, and C. And our default state, we have to be careful with this because our default state, if we don't design these, is going to be really, really obsessed with problems and not enough obsession around possibilities. So this negative bias is, it was good for us when, you know, we only had fire, no electricity, and there were, the wolves would kill you at night. We needed a little bit of this, but we don't need it anymore. We don't need this negativity bias. Here's the second piece of homework for you on this. When you wake up in the morning, jot down the first thing you think about and jot down the last thing you think about before you are going to bed. And then the last bit of homework is I want you to design a very specific situation. A situation right now that you're experiencing where there's a lot of uncertainty and ambiguity. You don't know how it's going to work out. If you're honest, you're a little bit timid about it. It's a little bit of nerves around it. You're not sure how it's going to go. And then I want you to create a best case outcome for that situation and make sure that it is so much better than anything you would have previously imagined that you have no idea how that could even be possible. If you immediately are like, oh, here's how this could happen. It's not good enough. Make it better. If you're like, yeah, I could see how this could actually be a realistic thing. Nope, not good enough. Make it better. Make it so good that you're like, I don't even know how this would be.